session number 9253, reel 8.
Mr. Jack Dorgan, reel 8. You were telling me about how you used to meet your girlfriend in Newcastle when you were allowed out at night.
Well, of course, I'm using girlfriend at the moment, but in those days we never used the word girlfriend. My girlfriend was my sweetheart. We called them sweethearts. My sweetheart, as I said, was Janet McNiven, second youngest in a family of 10. My father and three brothers all worked in Ashington Pits.
What would you do when you met her on the night when she was off then? How would you...
Well, we either went for a walk, mostly, or went to the pictures. There was pictures those days. You know, moving pictures. We either went to moving pictures, but mostly we went for a walk. Newcastle is very luckily placed from the point of view of parks, and then of course is the town moor. The town moor at Newcastle is a most extensive piece of open land, all just grass land, miles and miles around. I can't really describe the size of it, because it seemed to go, it would be more than 2 miles in any one direction, more than that, the town moor. And then, of course, there was Gosford Park itself, which, apart from where we were stationed or camping, there was other parts still unoccupied by the army, and could be used for walking, so that no difficulty in finding places for walking. We did a lot of walking. My wife and I, she was my sweetheart then, we did marry eventually in 1918, and the day I was married, I shall tell you a beautiful story. We were married for 60-odd years together.
What did you do when you didn't meet your sweetheart then?
Well, in the camp itself, there was these big marquees, as I said. And there was concerts every night in it. I used to take her there many times when she had a night out. And you could take your girlfriend, your sweethearts, your women friends, and enjoy the concerts. So it was great concerts and competitions, of all kinds of competitions in the marquees at night. Plenty of entertainment in the camp without going out.
So this was the same sort of concert that they had at Scarborough and Bridlington?
Oh yes, just a continuation of the same procedure. Oh yes.
You said you went out quite a lot though, and your
Indeed.
Sweetheart was only out one night a week. What
she
would you
was.
Do, what would you do when you went out with your mates from the army?
I didn't go out frequently. No, well, we just went to the pictures or wandered about. We had no special. I never went to pubs. Other fellas would spend the time in a pub. I never went to a pub.
Was there much drunkenness?
No, I wouldn't say a lot of drinking. There was a lot of drinking. Mine wasn't noted for. You see, in the work, they lose a lot of sweat. They work hard. They're stripped, you know, down to just a short pair of trousers, like a loincloth, and they lose a lot of sweat, you know, and they're all physically fit because it's hard work working down a pit. Every job down a pit's hard work, you know. And so, in Ashington itself, I believe I told you that the owners, they only planted 3 pubs. Well, those 3 pubs, of course, are on land which was owned by the Duke of Portland, and his agent, the estate agent, and the Duke of Portland, who he represented, they were Quakers, the Duke Portland's family, and they decided there would be only three public houses in the town of Ashington. And they were each a mile apart. They were in a triangle, and each had the particular name, the Grand Hotel, the Portland Hotel, and the White Elephant. The White Elephant was so named because it was on the right on the outskirts of Ashington, and the owners thought that it would be a white elephant to them, meaning that perhaps it wouldn't be frequented very much. But they all were, so that the pubs catered for the public up to a point, and then as the town filled up in between those three public houses, the Working Men's Club came into vogue. And at one time, before I left Ashington, there was 22 Working Men's Clubs which solely sold beer, all of them. And there was always a lot of beer drinking done by the miners in Ashington. Not all, of course, because we had Church of England, Plymouth Church, Salvation Army, and the Methodist Church, two Methodist churches, and they all had their congregations, and they, perhaps some of them might like a glass of beer, but not to the extent of getting drunk. But there was often, on a Saturday night, I've seen men being wheeled away in a wheelbarrow. Police never arrested anybody in Ashington, you know.
But this drinking carried on at Gosforth Park, did it?
So that when we were staying at Gosforth Park, fellas would go into town solely to get a drink. I couldn't say that because we didn't go to pubs. We'd go to pitchers or wind around and then bush back again.
Did the ones that drunk still occasionally need wheelbarrows?
No, not in the army. No. There was no drunkenness in the army.
So they cut down on the amount they drank?
Well, they must have, yes. Well, they had to. They hadn't the money. You remember? A miner, he earned more than he got when he went into the army, you know, when we were called up.
Was you paying anything?
I remember, you know what I did with one of my peers when I was in the army? 7 shillings a week I got. And I remember my sweetheart and I went to a watchmaker's and I bought a wristwatch for 7 bob. Spent all the 7 bob on a wristwatch. Oh, actually, later, when I went to France, I was always asking for wristwatches from home, and we got parcels out there, and each often contained a wristwatch.
Did you have any special celebrations as Christmas came along at Gosforth Park?
No, I can't say we did. We had Christmas dinner. Oh, yes. Christmas dinner in the army is always a big celebration. Christmas dinner. Roast turkey and all the trimmings with it, you know. And free beer. And the officers waited on us. Always the Christmas dinner. All the Christmas dinners ever we've ever had in the army. And even in France, which I could tell you, when we went to France about Christmas Day, 1915.
You were in the special service section. You'd agreed to fight overseas. Had the rest of the battalion by now been asked if they would serve overseas?
Must have. Everybody who went to France had volunteered out of from the territories to go. Actually, as I mentioned before, it was only these old soldiers, old NCOs rather, who never volunteered and stayed in England.
Were you very keen to get to France or wherever you were sent?
We didn't know going to France.
Or wherever you were sent?
Aye, that's right. We never knew. All the time before we went abroad, overseas, never knew where we were going. No idea at all. We were just training for war wherever they wanted us.
Were you actually keen to get to the fighting, though?
I can't say we're very keen. We just accept the day-to-day routine and train for it. I don't suppose we look forward. We could hear from all, even in the early days before we went over, we could hear stories from fellas who had been in different parts of the world fighting. I don't think they bothered us much. What's Northumbrians are very insular. You know, they confine themselves to their own county. We confine ourselves to our own regiment. We confine ourselves to our own training. And we confine ourselves to all our own self. We're a bit on that side, Northumbrians. We consider ourselves above the rest of England, you know.
When did you first get sent?
Sorry.
Okay. When did you first get sent abroad then? What was the date you first heard you were going abroad?
Well, it would be... we went abroad on April the 20th, 1915. And a few weeks before that, we were told we were going overseas, but not where. We weren't told where. And they gave us leave.
Was this your first leave?
Yes. The first leave I ever had from the army was we were given 4 days to go before we went overseas. So I went to, and everybody, of course, we were stationed at that time at Camboys. Now, Camboys was on the sea coast, and we were on coast defences in Northumberland. A matter of a couple of miles, 2.5 miles from Ashington, Camboys, the village of Camboys, 2.5 miles. So nobody wanted a leave pass, didn't need a pass, they just went home, you know. But me, no, I was a bit different. I goes to the colour sergeant, he's the senior sergeant in our company, Tommy Cutter, and I says to the colour sergeant, I says, Tommy, everybody addressed, off parade, we addressed ourselves ordinarily, you know. I says, Tommy, I want a railway pass. He says, what for? You live at Ashington. I says, yes. I says, I want a railway pass, and I want it for down the south. I'm forgetting the name of the town at the moment. For to go down south. He says, you don't want to go down south. You live at Ashington on your leave, 4-day leave. I said, I want to go down to see our Tom, my younger brother. He's with the Naval Division, Royal Naval Division, down in Hampshire. And I want to go down there at the same. Hampshire? He says, that's miles away. I says, yes, I need a railway pass for it. Oh, he said, you can't have a one. I said, I'm going to have a one. I'm entitled to a one. I could spend my 4 days, leave where I like. Write me a railway pass out. He wrote me a railway pass out for Hampshire. The way I went down to Hampshire, myself, arrived at this Royal Naval Division depot in Hampshire. And when I arrived there, I felt quite at home, except that everybody in the camp was dressed in naval uniform, all in naval uniform. So I inquired. I was the only khaki-clad soldier in the camp. I inquired of the guard where old Tom had his address, what company, where he was, and I arrived at his hut. They were in huts. First man I saw was their petty officer. Well, I said, hello, Sam. He says, Jack, what are you doing here? I said, I come to see our Tom. I'm on leave. We're going abroad. We're going to war. He said, but what are you doing here? Yeah, I said, I've come to see old Tom. Everybody's got 4 days leave. So I said, I've got 4 days leave here. And I'm going to stop here. Sam says, where are you going to sleep? I said, you'll find me place. Oh, I said, we'll find you a place. So Sam, he used to work with me, the petty officer from Ashington. All the Ashington lads were together. You know, Tom was the same when he saw me. He says, what are you doing out here, Jack? I said, I've come to see you. He said, did you need to come and see me? You know. I said, I've come here to spend 4 days with you. I could have gone home, but I was home last weekend, the weekend before. So I'm here. We said, where are you going to sleep? I said, with you, in your hut. He says, I've no beds or nothing. Aye, but they found them. I slept. At that depot, the Royal Naval Division, they were in, what do you call them, squads or what? Sections of 16 men, mess, they call them messes. A mess, number 1, 2, 3, 4 and so on, mess. Well, our Tom was one of 16, you see. Well, I made 17. So what they did was, as regards grub, I would have one meal with one mess, and then another meal with somebody else's mess, and somebody else another, and so on. They all made room for me. The tables were made for the 16. And the huts were all in batches of 16. Now the beds, they had in these huts, they had a trestle, two trestles, and three boards, three wide boards, and that was your bed. You were just a few inches up off the floor. And you had two blankets and a pillow. Two blankets and a pillow and a mattress. Well, they found a mattress, you know, from the stores. Sam Brown, of course, a petty officer, was a pal of mine at home. And they found the kit, and I slept in the morning of 16. I just had to go out and they shoved my bed away when the officer came in every morning. The Navy officer came in every morning to inspect and that. And often the officers passed me, and I would salute, you know. They saluted me back. I don't know what the thought of me being in the camp. But nobody once said, you're not allowed in here. And I was there 4 days.
What did you think of the naval style of the Royal Naval Division?
Well, it was different altogether, naval discipline and naval style and... But the training was all the same. England is trained for land, you see. The Royal Naval Division was, instead of being trained for the sea, they were trained to fight on land. So all the training was similar. I used to go out. I went into town of Blandford, they call the place. Blandford in, I've just remembered, in Hampshire. I went into Blandford and I hired a bicycle. So for the 4 days I had a bicycle. I had a job in the bicycle. I had to make sure my bicycle was out of the hut, at the hut, and were keen on the hut inspections. And I used to I had no kit actually, but my bicycle had to hump it out the hut, you know, when they were being inspected and so on. And I used to tour the district during the day, you see, but I was always back at meal times. I used to go through the guard. The naval guard used to salute me, and I passed through and had my grub, and then I got on my bicycle and wheel around the countryside. If they were on route marches, and they did a lot of route marches, I would be standing out where they were and let them pass, and I used to always salute the officer, you know, and I always got a salute back. I often wondered what they thought of me, because nobody once said, you're not allowed in here.
Which did you prefer, the army style of discipline or the navy style?
Oh, me own, yeah, naturally.
Before we go on to the actual embarkation, you mentioned that you've been to Camboys. You've been sent to Camboys for coastal defence work.
Camboys. C-A-M-B-O-I-S, Camboys.
When was that? When were you sent there?
The last year... full year before we went overseas. We went overseas in April 1915, so we would go to Camboys from Gosford Park in the winter. You see, we were in tents at Gosford Park, And when the winter came along, we were sent down to Camboys, and we were billeted in Camboys in the schools and churches and so on. Now, my company, Ashendon Company, were billeted in the institute, you know, the village institute, and we were very comfortable there, only there was no heat. I remember that winter, there was no heat in the building, so we got some extra blankets, and we were all right, you know. And then we were coast watching, you see, that winter until April, when we went overseas.
Could you explain now, what you did when you were coast watching?
Yes. Well, now, being in charge of the scouts, Captain Milburn, our company officer, always sort of appointed me as his special orderly. And whenever we were on maneuvers, he would have me with him. And I would run the messages for him. So that when our company, once in every 4 nights, we would leave our billet and we would be on the coast itself. Now, Camas is between the River Tyne and the River Blythe on the coast. And sand hills way along the coast and a road behind the sand hills. Now, in between that road and the sea itself, our fellows would be entrenched in the sand hills, looking out at sea. Now, Captain Milburn had me and Mick Bell, my pal, special pal, as his orderlies, and he would occupy the Coast Guard house. Coast Guard house wasn't a house, really. It was just a stone-built squat building, could only hold a half a dozen men, no more. And it was built up at the front with a wide, no wind, no glass in, but open, only about a foot wide in the length of the building, so you could look out at sea. And Captain Milburn made that his headquarters. I expect every officer, when they were on duty, did. And we would be in that building with him, while the rest of our company would be lying just on the sandhills, nothing with them. No blankets or nothing, you know. Ground sheet, we have a ground sheet, carriage ground sheet. And we'd be lying out there just waiting to see what would happen. And, of course, we had sentries out and moving up and down and so on. I remember one night, a ship in the fog came right up and out of the sea. It did not cause a commotion and came in, ship pointed into the onto the land and came right up onto the sea and then it stuck on the bay of Camas. And it still stayed upright. But nobody ever got off. And we were there, all rifles, you know. That was the night that Captain Milburn was on duty, and we just lay there. And we waited to see what was happening, and nothing ever happened. Not a man came off the ship, and they stayed on. I'll never forget it. And
you thought it was an invasion, did you?
Well, naturally, all keyed up. Nothing ever happened. Next day, a couple of tugs came up and pulled the darn thing off, and that was all. Never heard nothing more about it. Didn't know anything about it. None, didn't even know its name or nothing.
Well, you said you were entrenched. Did you mean you had any trenches at all along the
No. We had an entrenching tool, you know. A soldier uniform and equipment, you know. You see, you got your uniform, your putties, and your uniform, the forage hat, you know. No helmets. Helmets weren't invented in late 1915. But before we went to France, and when we went to France, we didn't have steel helmets. And you have your equipment, and you have your water bottle on this side, and you have a haversack this side, and your bayonet sheath here, and you carry your rifle in your right hand, and your backpack, you know. And that's all we had.
But you didn't dig yourself any sort of...
No. The usual entrenching tool, which was in two parts, the shaft and the... I don't know if you've seen an entrenching tool, but it has a pick on one side and then it's like a blade on the other, and then the hole for the shaft to go in. And you could use it for a... to pull sand or soil away and so on.
So, but you didn't dig any actual holes?
No. The fellas just made themselves comfortable in the sand hills. Yeah. No. The first trench... In fact, I never heard of trenches. We didn't do any preparation for trench warfare in England. Not at all.
How many nights would you be out on this coast watching?
Just took our turns one night and four. Four battalions, you see. The four battalions in the brigade, the 149th Brigade, and we were out on coast watching every fourth night. The other nights we slept in the institute or schools.
What did you do the rest of the time at Camas?
Well, there was nothing to do in Camas.
Did you carry on training?
Oh, yes, training all the time. Oh, yes, I trained every day. We're still training, marching. Bayonet fighting, did a lot of bayonet fighting, practice at the dummy, you know, and that. And all kinds of exercises.
Right, we've covered that your embarkation leave when you went to see your brother in Blandford and the Royal Naval Division. What happened when you got back from Blandford?
Well, I only had a couple of days and then I went abroad. Nobody asked me where I'd been or anything. We're not concerned. I was just had my 4 day leave and came back. I was more than 4 days actually, because I had a day to go. And you see, I never counted my 4 days till I got there. Tommy Cutter says, I don't know if he did say, but if he did, I can't remember him having seen anything. But I would have told him. I said my 4 days didn't start until I got there. Actually, you know, they start when you leave. But I stretched the point.
You didn't get into trouble then?
Oh, no. I came back and found everybody packing up, ready, getting ready to go abroad.
Did you get any special kit or equipment when you were
there? No, not at all. Just as we were, yeah.
Were you given any advice or lectures before you left?
No. Just did ordinary training right up to the day we left the town of the seaport of Blyth. Went to Blyth from Camboys. We went from Blyth.
Did you get any sort of send off when you left Camboys?
Oh yes. The parade, the battalion, four battalions were all paraded up in an open field at outside the village of Camboys, and we were dressed by some general or other. First of all, we were dressed by our own colonel, I forget his name for the moment. He had been turned down at the last minute to go abroad. And he stood there and bid farewell to his battalion, the 7th Northumberland Fusiliers, and introduced his new successor,